landscape by large and scale and small scale cosmological probes. And this is a talk based on this paper and a work sort of in progress. So in the original picture of inflation, which was proposed by Alan Guse, the universe was trapped in a metastable vacuum, which would lead to quasi-exponential expansion of the space-time. However, in order to have substantial inflation, the nucleation rate from the false vacuum to the true one should be small, and this would lead to eternal inflation, and therefore old inflation didn't manage to survive. Chain inflation is the reincarnation of the old idea of inflation, where instead of having one vacuum, one has a series of metastable minima, where the universe tunnels rapidly through a series of first-order phase transitions. And in each minima, the universe expands by a fraction of e-fold. And this was the idea was originally proposed by Fries and Spoliar. If the phase transition is rapid enough, the bubbles of true vacuum will have time to percolate and make the phase transition complete. And recalling that we have a huge number of vacua in the string theory, this approach might be taken seriously, noting the fact that the stringy vacua has been abused so far to just give some anthropic explanations for the universe we have, for what we see in our universe, and it doesn't give any experimental probe. So we don't have any experimental probe with that idea about the landscape. So Chiyalva and Danielson, instead of the sequential approach that that Fries and Spoliar had taken, assumed that during the course of inflation, the universe is divided to patches, and each of these patches are distributed in a homogeneous way. So instead of assuming that our universe is just one of us, so during its history has been in one phase, they have assumed that the universe, our universe, has been through all the phases that landscape allow. And so taking this ensemble approach to chain inflation, they studied the mechanism of generation of density perturbation in chain inflation. And they also tried to realize chain inflation in the context of flux compactified string theory using complex structure moduli as the agents. So in those landscape studies, they come up with two vacua structure, one in which the energy in the ladder of vacua changes linearly with the vacuum index. So the spacing between the vacua is constant. And in the second one, the energy is a quadratic function of the vacua index. And so they also established a formalism to calculate the amplitude of density perturbation and spectral index, as I said. But they somehow didn't realize that these models, so the models can have prediction for the CMB. So like the slow roll counterparts, which depending on the shape of potential can have predictions for the value of scalar spectral index and tensor spectral index. These models can also have this feature. And so also we all some assuming that inflation has happened this way, we try to put some phenomenological bound on the spacing between the vacua, and these phenomenological bound may be useful for string theorists who are trying to just come up with realistic structures and constructions in the landscape. And finally, I will try to just using the bound from bounding the amount of gravity wave that is generated by bubble collision during chain inflation, I will try to put a lower bound on the reheating temperature in these models. So the outline of my talk is as follows. First, I will review the previous results by Danielson and Chialva. Then I will inform you how these vacuous structure could be possibly realized within a string theory. And then I will match the models with observation, and I will show you how the spectral index, scalar spectral index, depend on the vacuous structure. And then I will show you criteria for distinguishing chain inflation from the slow roll counterparts. And as I said, I will try to put a lower bound on the reheating temperature from the amount of gravity wave that is produced during chain inflation. And then I will conclude my talk. So the chain inflation, as I said, and so the idea is that you have a potential with many metastable minima at different energies. And the phase transition, the phase transition among various vacua proceeds by nucleation of the bubbles, and the bubbles are filled by new vacuum at lower energy. And the latent heat from a phase transition is stored within the bubble walls. And when the bubbles collide, the energy of the walls is converted to radiation, which in the string setup would correspond to massless string states. And so I assume that the value of the decay rate per unit physical volume is large enough that larger scale thermalization could be achieved at each phase transition. And in our construction or in our analysis, we will assume that decay between two distant vacua are strongly suppressed, and the bubbles are produced with negligible volume and expand at the speed of light once they are created. And these bubble walls will collide and change the energy to and transform the energy, their energy to radiation. So as the universe as the time passes, we observe the universe as filled with radiation, and regions where each of these regions are filled with one vacuum energy in each of these letters, and these are distributed in a homogeneous space, so these small regions. So taking this ensemble approach to the problems, the energy density of the universe will be a portion which is coming from the cosmological constant within each region, and the energy which is stored in the wall. So collision of these bubble walls will give us radiation, but we assume that the amount of radiation is quite negligible. For the point of our discussion, we will neglect this term. And the total energy will be the sum over energies in each phase times the fraction of the volume of the universe, which is occupied by the mth vacuum.
Yes, about the neglecting the radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the energy is negligible, and the particle you produce topology like this. You're sort of producing vertical by steps.
Yeah, and finally, for when the energy in the walls become comparable to the vacuum energy, so the amount of radiation becomes comparable to the vacuum energy, that the inflation terminates, and so they will be. I think for the sake of inflation itself, they will become important just at the end of inflation. But for the sake of non-Gaussianity, I think you have to take them into account. So there are some discussions in the paper by Chelv and Danielson that shows that the transfer of transfer from above, from the walls, the energy in the walls to the radiation could be neglected. So I'm you may want to just look at that. So I don't remember the details right now. So then all besides the energy in each phase, in each vacuum energy in each phase, we also have the energy in the bubble walls, and so this function script f m comma m minus one is the energy weighted fraction stored in the uncollided bubble walls of the m minus one state. So these are fractions of the bubble walls that are not collided yet. And they are given in terms of this PM and PM dot on, which is the probability that a wall generated at time t is still uncollided at t prime through this integral.
What's B physical?
It's a physical volume of the universe, so A cubed. Let me pause and just quote the results of their attempt to realize chain inflation within a string theory. So for construction of these vacuum structure within string theory, we focus on type 2B with fluxes, where the potential will be given in this form, where K is the Kähler potential and W is the super potential. And what's really important for them during this construction is that they just focus on complex structure moduli, and therefore they're mostly interested in the structure of superpotential, which is obtained from the fluxes through this expression. And pi is the period vector given by these integrals. And omega is the holomorphic three form. And they have shown that if the potential has a minimum somewhere in the moduli space, you can construct series of minima from that minimum by monodromy transformations. For example, in the case where F2 is much smaller than F1, they can use of conifold monodromies to generate new minima. And if we move in the moduli space around the conifold point where the cycle A1 vanishes, then we will go through cots and we will end up on a new sheet when we go through these conifold singularities. And therefore, the cycles will transform like this, where n is the number of times we go through the we go around the conifold, and then the potential after this transformation can be evaluated using the old periods, but with a new RR form and Nova-Schwarz NS-NS forms. Yeah.
So why can you neglect the killer moduli, or what is the argument? What happened with those?
So they assume that they are stabilized. So in those constructions, they are just assumed that by some mechanism, probably they are stabilized. I don't. So this is
because often, like you know, you tend to be usually, and if you want to follow KKT, you first stabilize the complex, and then the killer are like the killer moduli.
Mm-hmm. As far as I understood, there is no such discussion in their paper, and they have assumed that KLM moduli is stabilized by some mechanism.
Okay. The other question is, A and B are three cycles?
Yeah.
Can you remind me which one is which in the conifold? They're only within the conifold or in...
So A1 is the one that goes around the conifold, and
the compact one, when you take mm-hmm. the non-compact limit of the
mm-hmm.
and B is the one that would be mm-hmm.
So the RR form and NS-NS form will transform like this, and then you will be able to, so if in the limit where F1 goes to infinity, if your potential has a minima, then you can find other minima also through this monodromy transformation. And they also argue that the quadratic behavior in the energy of the vacuum in the landscape, the quadratic structure can be arise if the axial dilaton is stabilized independent of the complex structure moduli. So I don't understand this. But anyway, so they just give these arguments just to motivate the model. And so if you just focus on these two cases, you can show that the total energy of the universe could be written in this form. So astonishingly simple for these two cases, just assuming that n is large, big N is very large, so you have too many minima. And n of TE now is just this time-dependent number. And we can find the slow roll parameter for these two. So tau is the inverse of a nucleation rate. So nucleation rate per unit time per volume, if you multiply it by physical volume and just inverse it, you will obtain the nucleation time. So for these two cases, you can just find the slow roll parameter. Yeah. So if you just coarse grain everything and take the ensemble approach, you will see that the whole universe, irrespective of these collisions that happen on smaller scales, expand like this.
And case one versus case two.
Sorry. Case one is the one in which there is just so n here is just an integer, but here it's replaced by a time dependent term.
Yeah, why there are two cases?
As I said, so one is in which they use monodromy to just generate the vacuum the minima, and then the spacing between the vacuum is constant, and the other one is when the axial dilaton is stabilized independent of the complex structure moduli. They argue that they argue that you can come up with this quadratic structure in the landscape too.
Yeah.
In other words, they end up finding that the energy density is just always more or less on average dominated by the vacuum density.
Up until end of the inflation, where this Laurel parameter basically become of order one. And the thing that is interesting, you will see that then the scalar spectral index becomes independent of the details of these spacings.
How good is the approximation?
If the bubble, the bubble radius is much smaller than the size of the horizon, then you can take this approach. And for that, I guess you should find some, you should be able to find some constraints on tau. So if you compare Hubble parameter, so I think having gamma, so nucleation rate being larger than Hubble parameter would correspond to that. Yeah. For the sake of simplicity, we assume that the nucleation rate per unit time is constant over time and independent of m. So if you just start from the highest vacuum, so with this rate you will tunnel to the n minus 1. So this should be minus 1. And then from the n minus 1 you can tunnel you can leave the state n minus 1, or this state can be populated by transitions from the highest from the above vacuum, and so these are you have to solve these couple differential equations to find the probability distribution, and they are subject to this normalization constraint. And if you just solve these equations, you will find them to be this Poisson-like distribution. So that's interesting. And having this probability, you can find the fraction of uncollided bubble walls. To extract a formalism, to build a formalism to calculate the cosmological perturbation during chain inflation, they argue that besides the quantum fluctuations that are generated in the case of a slow roll, there is also a statistical fluctuations that are coming from bubble nucleation and collision. So this probability function has some fluctuations, and these fluctuations, the fluctuations in the PM, could be a source for the fluctuations in the energy density. So as I said, the probability function in the state M will be subject to this differential equation, where gamma tilde M represents the average number of bubbles of the mth vacuum generated at time t, irrespective of the bubbles generated at previous times. So this is the reason that they are distributed by a Poisson distribution with mean value gamma tilde m. And beside the first, therefore the first kind of fluctuations PM is due to the statistical fluctuations in this quantity. So the quantum fluctuations will also lead to the fluctuations in the physical volume, which in turn will translate to the fluctuations in PM. So both these two types of fluctuations, statistical fluctuations and quantum fluctuations, will lead to fluctuations in this quantity. And what they have done is, yep.
Sorry. Yeah. So you're switching. So you're not using. You're not really force training, right? Because you are. So the fact that you want to capture between the two points and so forth, you actually are keeping track of all the numbers and bubbles and so forth. This, you're not. There's not a single field effect. It's a role here.
So there are some discrepancies because of so even though the role of radiation is negligible during the course of inflation, you will see that the perturbations are the formula for perturbation is such that as if it's generated with a k inflation with speed sound of radiation lag, I mean 1 over square root of 3, and this is somehow different from the single field case, yeah. And also in the action that they write down for the curvature perturbations, there is a term that comes from the interactions of the vacuum with radiation, and this will lead to the fact that even for equivalent, if you look at, for example, the quadratic structure in the vacua, the spectral index be different from its corresponding equivalent counterpart in this slow roll. So there is also a term, there is an interaction term coming from that. And this is, yeah, these are.
So is there really
I mean, for the perturbations?
Yeah, so to write a coarse grain where just treat this as a single scalar field, maybe with stochastic
noise? The way I understand this is that that's what they have done. So they write it.
But
there are differences, I mean, it's not just a single slow rolled case. You will have. You will have differences because of the fact that the role of kinetic energy is now replaced by radiation, whose equation of a state is different, and this will lead to just a signature in the model, which is different from the slow roll. So you're talking about
so
what?
We'd have both a noise term part of the production and a noise because as a source, not a damping term, but actual source, I would guess.
You're just comparing it with warm inflation?
Yeah, well, I'm more just comparing it with the stochastic inflation, which is on the large scale. So essentially, by extending this, it's the same thing as stochastic, but where the fluctuations in sub bubbles instead of being super bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Stochastic, I can calculate the 2-point function using the same most cute field that described, but I have to have
Mm-hmm. No, I mean these are sub Hubble. Perhaps that comes the difference from.
Yeah. But the Manuel's question was now from what I followed here is you're not actually using a coarse grain description to do calculation. You actually are using the microphysics.
In order to calculate the perturbations, yeah, that's what they do. So. So they find equations for the curvature perturbations of the comoving hypersurface script R, and those equations could be derived from this action. So This is the action that the equations of motion in their paper could be derived from. Where zeta is just this z times r. And as you see, this 1 over 3 term that appears here, and delta is just k squared. This is the Laplacian. So in 1 over 3, you will, this is the due to the fact that role of kinetic energy is replaced with radiation, whose equation of state is 1 over 3. And also there is another term in the equation of motion, which is due to the interactions of vacuum and radiation. And this will lead to just a signature for chain inflation, which is different from the slow roll case.
So that this equation comes from the equation you had
in
the last page.
No, there are lots of steps that I just ignored.
Yeah.
I just
want to know how reliable those steps are.
I mean, it's a paper, so they write down.
Physically, what's current? Is that still the scalar field current or is it radiation?
So R is. So they assume that there is a field, there is a fluid with which has some the fluid velocity, and it's h. So r is h minus phi. Is phi minus hv, where v is the four velocity of the fluid. So things are somehow.
It's fluid.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's
happening
in
the background is driven by this
radiation. The radiation
is going from the radiation.
Like the other. And the valve, I assume, because they also have perturbation. And they're not
I mean, for the sake of evolution, they are negligible, but for perturbations, they are present.
Right, so you have, I mean, I guess the roughly a two-field system,
mm-hmm.
The input on itself, and then it's the radiation. And you're saying, if you're looking at it, the radiation reduces the most perturbation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the amplitude of density perturbations will be given by this equation, which is different from the slow roll inflation by the presence of 1 over square root of 3 in the denominator, which is just, as I said, the characteristic of the existence of radiation instead of kinetic energy.
I don't think this is reasonable because you don't have vacuum. So this is like Bunch Davis vacuum, but obviously, if you have this bubble collision.
I mean, so, yeah, so the vacuum, so they assume that the radius of the bubbles at the time of creation is quite small. But this coarse graining approach, as you say, will just break down at that approach. And so there is a paper by Danielson that he just chose the vacuum such that like Trans-Planckian thing. So you have it just encodes the vacuum is chosen such that it encodes that there is a cutoff which is just 1 over the radius of the bubble, and he. And so the paper just predicts that chain inflation has some signatures, which are just some superimposed oscillations on top of the power spectrum.
Do you know what's the temperature of the radiation?
If you assume that thermalization has been just successful at each step, just you just find it through the equation T to power 4 is proportional to the energy gap, I guess.
Energy gap.
Mm-hmm.
So you have sort of gone to a full screen effect here where you, your scale is bigger than the size of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern is that there's no noise term in this, right? Because you expect, because you're creating particles at small scales, you might expect essentially this in your effective theory, full screen effective theory, this looks like a noise term.
Mm-hmm.
Which would, is another way of saying that even if you start with a vacuum at some time, it's very quickly going to not be vacuum. Populate
modes.
So it's not clear that this action is enough to describe this.
But of course, the expansion of the universe also directs it
away. But the whole thing is radiation, right? So
the
very perturbations generate
this
radiation.
The criterion is that whether the temperature is larger than Hubble or smaller than Hubble. And
temperature is quite smaller than Hubble.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So if that's true, then I think this looks right.
Okay. So you think,
and if the temperature is just the difference between energy levels, and if these are very finely spaced, that could be correct. I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay. So
I mean, actually, you find an upper bound on the spacing just from this fact.
The temperature is this one.
Mm.
Okay.
So. The scalar spectral index for these two cases could be calculated, and it's given in terms of these two equations for these two models.
So what would be the theoretical error in that formula if you were to quantify it? You're doing several expansions and approximations. If you were to put a parameter to estimate the theoretical error, then?
I guess like this slow-roll case, it will be epsilon dot plus just variation of the slow-roll thing, slow-roll parameter, the corresponding slow-roll, which is different, of course.
This is true. I mean, there is also something that depends on the coarse-graining physics, right?
Mm-hmm.
There should be some parameter proportional to that.
Mm-hmm. What I was asking back, I think it was assuming that the theory is
yeah, I just wanted to have, to have that parameter is something like gamma times gamma divided by h, or no, h divided by gamma, ordered plus higher order of h divided by gamma, something like that.
Hmm.
That's the expectation.
Yeah, I don't know what the parameter is, but the assumption, right, is that gamma is faster, the theory is faster than h.
But I guess here just the higher order terms, if I remember correctly, are just time variations of epsilon itself. So there is no higher order corrections like gamma over h over gamma.
Because
h over gamma is just as long as h over h gamma is bigger than 3h actually is. Marginally, even if it's satisfied, then you can have successful chain inflation too.
Yeah, but you would, if it is gamma is 6H, then you have 40-50% corrections to your result, right?
No. So at least if I remember correctly, the formula, the higher order terms are just variations of epsilon. There is no real.
Because they ignore those terms in terms of this
version. Okay.
I mean, if you have a very homogeneous Hubble patch, then you cannot assume that it's a vacuum punch Davis vacuum. So there would be some corrections because of this coarse grain. Yeah, I guess this needs to be quantified.
Mm-hmm.
Several types here. So if you say the temperature is right, there should be T over H correction.
Yeah.
And then H also over the cutoff, because the coarse grain scale corrections.
But the coarse graining thing will break down at the ratio of RB, which is the radius of the bubble, over Hubble parameter. This is so. If you assume that the bubbles are negligible, if they start from just negligible radius, then can't you ignore these terms? I mean, I think effectively these terms are much smaller than even the epsilon dot thing.
But RB is relatively smaller than 4 over gamma.
Yeah, so gamma, so the basic cutoff is, so the fundamental cutoff is just 1 over RB, where the RB is the radius of the bubble. And then the bubbles are just, I mean, it depends on the model, but I assume that they just start from the very small scales, much, much smaller than the Hubble radius. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the size of the thing just before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you get from percolation?
Just assuming it grows as the
speed.
Yes? Start from that.
And for the first time, 1 over
gamma. Exactly, so 1 over gamma thing.
So, I mean, then... The correction will not be small then.
It depends. It's,
yeah, it was just I mean, unless you don't want that parameter is fixed by something else, so it's important to try.
Mm-hmm.
Like to get 60, 40, something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that depends on how much tunneling you have, if it is too fast, too slow.
So perhaps this fifth constraint of gamma bigger than h is not enough to just rely on this coarse graining approach. Perhaps just gamma should be much, much larger than h, then this thing, then that the effects that you talk about can be neglected. That's my expectation then. But anyways, I just assume that during this calculation that gamma is bigger than 3H, and that will be enough. So here I've tried to just match the model with observation, and from the WMAP7 we know that the amplitude of density perturbation is given by this quantity, and the scalar spectral index varies in this range with 68% level confidence. 68% confidence level. And what's really important, the observable modes are the modes that exit the horizon 6E falls before the end of inflation, and inflation ends when basically our equivalent of slow roll parameter becomes 1. That's the time where inflation, where the vacuum energy becomes comparable to the energy of the bubble walls. And then for this linear structure, Hubble parameter varies like quadratic function of time. And from setting epsilon equals to 0, we can find the final time. Then we find how number of e-foldings. We will find the time the mode exits the horizon, 6 e-folds before the end of inflation. And then when you just impose the WMAP normalization constraint, you will find the nucleation time in this model. So that says that in order to produce the right amount of perturbation at horizon scale, nucleation rate should be given just by this expression in the energy gap. That might just be a fine tuning, but if you just manage to relate this to, because in the domain of all thing, so in the phase transition thing, the nucleation rate is related to in the stringy picture is related to the tension of D brain or M brain that separates the two phases. So if it's related to a physical quantity, then I don't know how it's related. I was speculating. If it's related to a fundamental quantity, then it's not strange that even if, so there is no fine-tuning thing. So I mean, once, if it's related to a fundamental quantity, it's just fixed, and it says the tension should be like this. The tension of the D brain or M brain should be this to obtain the right amount of perturbation.
Yeah, that would be strange. Or angular logic model, even though it's closer to 1
Sorry?
Those are fixed. Those aren't things we can get. You can't go into certain things to what those tensions are.
But can't you? Are you sure? Yeah, so that's...
Yeah, that's right, you have a ratio between the two, so you play with the compact computation.
Yeah, I mean, the 10D is fixed, but the 4D is
fixed. Okay, that's...
I haven't... I was just thinking about it and didn't do any calculation, but it seems that if you just translate it to the tension of the deep brain that separates the phases, then you can just... probably find some constraint on the volume of the extra dimension probably you have compactified on, then I don't know. This could be just mere speculation. And so...
requiring that you have...
requiring that you have at least 60 number of e-folding, then it tells you that the number of minima should the minimum number of minima should be like this. So you 1 over, so it varies like 1 10 to the power of minus 12 over the energy of the gap. And then if you want the statistical approach to be just viable. If you want it to be bigger than one, then you from that you can find an upper bound on the value of MF. So the energy to the gap energy is just MF to power of 4. That tells you that the energy difference between the vacuum at least should be at most 10 to the power of minus 12 in Planckian units. And
what is a realistic requirement for the number of minima that you need? Would
2
be enough?
No, it wouldn't. So if you just impose gamma be bigger than 3H, the thermalization thing, then you will see that the number of minima should be at least 270, something like that, in this linear case. So even for 270, I think you can use this statistical approach. But this is just from the positiveness of the number of minima. I mean, at least you should have one. At least you should have two, actually.
But if you don't get at least 270, then the whole analysis breaks down. So
I mean, no. The 217 comes from the fact that you have thermalization. So gamma bigger than 3H, the thermalization constraint, give you a much lower upper bound on F. I mean, the much tighter spacing between the vacua. And then if you calculate the number of minima for that, yes, then you will find 270. So I will tell you. So the fact that, so by lowering the energy difference between the minima, then you have to increase the number of vacua. It's not like, being able to just lower the energy of the scale, the energy scale of inflation by lowering the energy gap. And in fact, if you just calculate the energy, the Hubble parameter 60-fold before the end of inflation, you will find it to be constant. So these MF to power of 4, and there is another MF to power of 4 from the energy, they cancel out and they give you just a number. And this tells you that, so if you calculate the amplitude of tensor perturbation over scalar perturbation, it becomes around 6 or 5, so this amount. And this is smaller than the Slorel thing, so the linear potential Slorel thing by a factor of 1 over square root of 3. And that's due to just that characteristic 1 over square root of 3 that appears in the denominator for the density perturbation. And so if you just at 60-fold before the end of inflation, if you just calculate the scalar spectral index, all MFs will cancel out and it gives you a number. So irrespective of the details of the potential, if you look at the potential just in a in a just coarse grain way, you will it wouldn't matter. So that's what's really important, and it gives you just a number. So for linear potential, the scalar spectral index is this, which is different from this one. So this difference is due to the interaction term between vacuum and radiation in the energy density. And this is a characteristic of chain inflation that can be used to distinguish it probably at larger scales.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused by the presence of all these significant digits.
The thing is that so the larger scale probes, the future larger scale probes, it will be able to probe the scalar spectral index up to 10 to power of minus 3. So even I just wanted to emphasize that. So if you just look at these things and just round everything, it's 0.97, 0.97, that's not interesting. But I just wanted to emphasize that in the light of those future experiments, those higher digits are important then.
I was saying that, for example, the uncertainty over the number of unfolding zones, probably plus or minus 20, if not 20, which would change that number by maybe more than 1%. So you would say the last 4 digits are not really...
Yeah, perhaps.
If we have 59 unfolding zones, how much would that number change?
So I wouldn't argue that, because just looking at the spectral index, you can just probably, you can come up with a Slorer model that have this thing, not linear potential, but.
No, I'm just saying that 6 is not dictated by any experiment.
Yeah. I agree. I just wanted to because they are very close, I just wanted to probably I should have cut off at the third. But I just wanted to emphasize that there is a difference in between them. So linear potential should be quite shallow to just have to sustain inflation and produce the right amount of perturbation. So parameter kappa should be this amount. And the right amount for the density perturbation, we had to tune the nucleation rate. And this might give us the impression that the potential here should be also quiet, shallow, probably, or linearly shallow to just to obtain the same result. But even though the height of the minima are fixed, the nucleation time for the nucleation rate depends on the barrier and also the separation of the fields. And so you can play with these two parameters and obtain the amount that you want. So I just want to emphasize that the overall shape of the potential here could be far from linear. When, if you just look at the potential, you may see a very steep potential, but the height of the barrier might have just been increased so that you obtain the right amount of nucleation time. So from the normalization constraint, if you just impose that normalization constraint, then MF should be, so the mass scale of the energy, the gap energy is just 2 times 10 to the power of minus 5 M Planck. If you just start the inflation at Planckian energies. If you just assume that the number of minima was large enough just to have the right amount of just exactly 60 folds, this constraint will reduce to this one. The amount of running at larger scales and the scales that are important for probes like Lyman Alpha Forest is quite small, so there is no hope for seeing any running in this model. For the quadratic case, also one can do the same analysis. The scalar spectral index will be different here. Also, the running will be small here. The constraint on the energy gap, the mass gap, will be much larger. So actually, you have the difference between the energies will be 10 to the power of minus 28 in Planckian units. So even though we do not have any motivation from string theory for higher types of vacua structure, I just did a calculation to see how the scalar spectral index varies with the exponent here C. And it turns out that NS behaves like this as a function of C, as a function of this exponent. And if you just impose the constraint on scalar spectral index coming from WMAP 7, you will see that C bigger than 5 is ruled out with 68% confidence level. These are the distinguishing criteria for chaining the signatures of chain inflation models. So, due to the interaction of radiation with vacuum energy, as I said, the scalar spectral index will be different. Also, the breakdown of coarse graining approach at the scales of bubbles could lead to the oscillations in the spectrum. These oscillations will be proportional to H over lambda, where lambda is 1 over RB, where RB is the radius of the bubble. But I think the most serious one, more serious signature for chain inflation is just the violation of the consistency relation. So normal in single field slurl case, you will have you will have the tensor over scalar ratios should satisfy this this equation, where NT is the tensor spectral index here. And in this case, because we have square root of 3 in the denominator for the density perturbation, you will have square root of 3 in the on the right-hand side of this equation.
Can I ask you something about the calculation of perturbation for the tensor mode?
Mm-hmm.
So there, this calculation assumes that...
For the tensor mode?
For the tensor mode.
Mm-hmm.
This you're assuming that everything comes just from quantum fluctuation of the vacuum of tensor modes?
Quantum fluctuation, yeah. I just also looked at the tensor perturbations coming from the bubble collision.
Yes.
And because the Hubble, the ratio of energy gap over the Hubble parameter is quite small, has to be quite small, then the amount of gravity waves that are that is produced is actually very small. This is.
So that's some reason that you're
wrong. Yeah.
Is there a way to understand why it's
yeah, there is.
For the tensor and not for the scalar.
I will just. But in order to do that, I have just somehow assumed that universe is taking that sequential step transition in the ladder. I didn't just distribute the vacuum. I didn't do a thorough study of the tensor perturbation like the scalar ones. From that calculation, you can see that the amount of gravity wave that is produced from bubble collision could be expected. I will find the peak frequency, because the profile of gravity wave that is produced from these bubble collisions usually have just this wedge shape. And the peak frequency will for the values of MF that we have, that we obtain to be viable, will be always will fall in very high frequencies, 10 to the power of 12, 10 to the power of 20 hertz. And then the amplitude will be also very small.
So on the previous slide, so RB, I seem I was wrong by saying, keeping R the size of R in that independent of gamma.
So RB depends on the decay rate, and so if you just take it, so if the breakdown of the analysis will be the moment where the bubbles collide, then I think this will lead to much more stringent constraint on the nucleation rate and also so as in Euclidean action, so that I mean the nucleation rate is related to the Euclidean action. I mean then you have to be more careful so that the bubbles do not be that large when they collide. So if you want this coarse graining approach to be viable, I think otherwise if they are comparable to the size of the horizon, then the oscillations on the power spectrum will be large. So perhaps from that one can, from this constraint one can put a much tighter bound on the thermalization, and so this is probably interesting to look at. And so we will have fewer gravity waves at larger scales in comparison with this Laurel thing. But on the other hand, if you look at for a given value of R, for most of these models that I talked about, they predict R bigger than 5%. So if R is 5% for the chain inflation thing, then R will be multiplied by a square root of 3, and NT will be larger than this Laurel case. For this Laurel case, R of 5% will need a precision of order 10 to power of minus 3 to see the scale dependence of tensor perturbations. For the chain inflation model, and the sensitivity of 100 will be enough to see the deviation from the slower thing. So the fewer gravity waves at larger scale doesn't make verifying the consistency relation. Yeah.
So the tensor
discovery ratio
is decreased by factor.
Yeah.
So
hex
over 3 is
neuroscopes. No, actually it's... No. No, it's so. So this is increased, so R is always decreased. Oh, right. So Knox and Song argue that lensing of the E-mode by density perturbation along line of sight from the last scattering surface will limit our ability to detect B-modes to R of 2 times 10 to the power of minus 4. But they say large consistency relation can be seen if R is bigger than 10 to the power of minus 3. And in another paper, they argue that loop corrections in this region where R is less than 0.16 is small enough so that if you see any deviation from consistency relation, you can confidently exclude the single field Slorol inflation. And for our case, in the model that I described, the scalar spectral index is always less than this value. So if you see any modification, then single field Slorol inflation could be ruled out, and then chain inflation could be taken seriously in that case. So from the amount of gravity wave from bubble collision, one can somehow constrain the reheating temperature. So because that's because chain inflation proceeds through a series of first order phase transitions. And for a single phase transition, the profile of gravity waves that are produced is a wedge shape, as I talked about. And so the amount of gravity with respect to the value of the vacuum energy is taking this profile, where Imax is the maximum of the profile at the peak frequency. Peak frequency is related to the nucleation time and also maximum at the profile is also related to the nucleation time and also the Hubble parameter of the scale. So for the single field case, after taking into account the expansion of the universe, the fact that the lambda, the wavelength of the modes are redshifting, then you will see that you obtain this value for the peak frequency today and its amplitude, noting the fact that the energy density of the gravity waves decay like a to the power of minus 4.
Okay, but you're producing this things all the time, right?
Or yeah, so I have a series of, I have its chain of gravity waves that are produced. This is just for single field case, single transition case.
Yeah, I think I did it the same way. You get just one frequency. I would expect that as you produce this thing.
No, this is for just single phase transition. That's what I'm saying. I haven't looked at the chain inflation thing yet. This is for single thing. So.
Shouldn't that contribute to the density to R as well? Does it have the right spectrum?
It's very tilted. No. I mean, for the values of MF that I obtain. The peak frequency will be just off, and also the amplitude of the peaks are damped, and that's because of, as it says, this is due to the fact that where is that? This epsilon is mf to the power of 4, the energy gap, and it should be compared with the energy of the background, which is h to the power of 4, and then this is a small. But if you want the amplitude at peak frequency be less, so you can play with the parameters even with these in this range, which satisfy the nucleation rate, and you obtain omega. So the energy density of the universe could become bigger than one. So their contribution to the energy density of the universe could become bigger than one, and they can overclose the universe. And from not having such a situation, then you can put a lower bound on the preheating temperature in this model.
So this single burst of gravitational waves is taking place when?
No. I mean, I'm just considering just a very fake situation in which you have a single phase transition. Okay, so you have one metastable vacuum to the true one.
Yes.
And then you are just, these are the formalism that has been developed.
Yeah, but you said that to know the frequency nowadays, we need to redshift it during the history. So I'm asking, when did this take place? Gravitation dominated, metal domination?
So the phase transition, in this case, the phase transition occurs during just for a single thing, it occurs. So during the inflation, which is produced by the vacuum energy. So there is a vacuum energy which drives inflation, and then the nucleation rate is big enough to get to the true minimum. Okay, and okay for just single thing. If it's not right enough, then you would never end up to the true. So the bubble will never percolate. Okay. So if the thermalization, the nucleation rate is big enough, then you can get to the true vacuum. And the Hubble parameter in this case is just is just coming from the vacuum energy here. But in our case, in chain inflation thing, you are the space you're making a transition from one vacuum above in the ladder to the one you are, and that difference is mf to power of 4, okay, and then when you want to just consider it the evolution from the end of inflation to today, there the Hubble parameter at the end of inflation is important. And it's just a number in this case. In our case, it's just is of Planckian values.
Okay.
So so this ratio is always small.
And then you start wrapping up.
Yeah, okay. So for the linear case, if you just plug in the the phase transition that so you have series of tunnelings till you get to the end of inflation, and every gravity wave which is produced, every amount of gravity wave which is produced in the beginning phase and toward the end of inflation is redshifted. And because the background is exponentially expanding and the energy density of the gravity waves decay like e to the power of minus 4n. So what really contributes to the amount of gravity waves is the last phase transitions. And here I just looked at the last phase transition that occurs. And I assume that if you just look at higher ones, if you just look at the ones that are before, because of that suppression factor, they are at most of order of this one or quite negligible. So for the nucleation time and value of the Hubble parameter in the chain inflation with the constant vacuum structure, you will obtain this value for the peak frequency, amplitude of peak frequency, and the peak frequency itself. And so if you have chain inflations with vacuum, with linear structure with MF less than this amount, then demanding that the amount of gravity wave do not overclose the universe, so omega h squared is being less than F max, one obtains this lower bound on the reheating temperature. So if you want this to be less than, if you impose this condition simultaneously and you want this to be less than one, then you will obtain that reheating temperature should be bigger than 10 to the power of minus 10 M Planck. And for the quadratic case, reheating temperature should be like this.
Should be like as a matter of principle, it can't overclose the universe because if the last phase transition releases some fraction of critical density, I'd say with perfect efficiency, all of the latent fees of the last phase transition was restraining the gravitational waves. So at that moment, they had some small fraction of critical density.
No, this is the amounts that contribute to today. Actually, this is not a very conservative constraint that I impose. If I want to impose it, I assume that this should be so in the LISA, in the range that is probed by LIGO. So we know that the stochastic gravity wave background is less than 10 to the power of minus 6. But I assume that if in other frequency bands, this should be at least few percent, at least 100. And if you just impose that, you will obtain a much tighter constraint here. But this is not very conservative, I guess.
This is very conservative.
It is very conservative.
I mean.
But I'm saying how to, at the moment of the phase transition. That moment, the gravity waves don't overclose the universe.
No, they don't overclose the universe. But,
how would they come to overclose the universe?
I think you shouldn't call it overclosing, just that we know how much radiation there is in the universe, and that limits omega h squared. So we know.
Okay, so we know what it is.
From Big Bang nuclear synthesis, we know you cannot have more than 10%
dark
radiation.
Okay, so at that time it doesn't overclose, but if the peak frequency and the amount of gravity wave is larger today, then we will face a difficulty because of the reason that Niaj just said.
I just got extra radiation, right?
Right. No, I agree that it shouldn't be more than. Basically, there's the limit from Big Bang nuclear synthesis, the 10 to the minus 5 limit, you know, saying that at the moment that the gravitational waves were produced, they should have had at least less than 10% of the critical density, the amount of radiation at that moment. But with a phase transition that's just a tiny fraction of the critical density in latent energy, how could it possibly even achieve that?
first, I think it, I don't know if I remember correctly, I think the bubbles tend to land the same.
Well,
Vivian bound on probably no gravitational.
It's about 10 to the minus 6. 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6. But that corresponds to 10 to the minus 1. That's just saying that.
Right, right, I know, but I mean, so just saying it's 10%, but if it's 1%, then it starts that. So that's right. Oh, you're right, if it's just 10%, then that's not that.
No, I mean, 10 to the minus 6 of the critical density today means 10 to the minus 1 of the radiation, that, yeah, 10 to the minus 1 roughly, back then. But I'm just saying that if phase transition itself has a latent energy density which is much less than 10 to the minus 1 of critical density, then even if it converts to perfect efficiency of gravitational waves, which it surely does not, then even then it wouldn't achieve enough energy density.
So I assume that the reheat temperature at the end of inflation is arbitrary. So because the Hubble parameter at the end of inflation is a number independent of MF. And it's of order 10 to the power of minus 6 M Planck. So reheat temperature, I assume that if it's instant reheating, then would be that amount. Then certainly that one will satisfy this. But it says that reheating temperature cannot be lower than this one. If the collision the collision of bubble balls is not efficient, then you will produce too much gravity waves today from the last phase transition.
So I guess what the datum is applying is that somehow your other conditions within drivers, this is not an independent constraint.
I also use this one. I also use the fact that the spacing between the minima is constrained by having the successful thermalization at each step. So I use this along with this one. So I plugged in this value for MF and I found this lower bound for reheating temperature.
I mean, I guess maybe that's one way to say it. If the reheating temperature has to be lower than H to the 1/2 at the end of inflation, but then H to the 1/2 at the end of inflation has to be bigger than MF. Just because MF to the fourth is the latent energy of the efficient, that just has to be less than H squared.
Okay.
For it to not be more than the critical.
Okay. So.
So there's a lot stronger constraint on MF than this one. If the end of inflation / reheating occurs at a lot lower temperature than 10 to the minus 5.
I can see that maybe you just can write the equations for me, show that to me, because I can't see that. So let me conclude my talk. So we know that realization of slow roll inflation within a string theory is a quite difficult task. So one might take this stringy landscape seriously and put it into good use and use it to realize inflation within this landscape using this chain idea of inflation. And I showed that depending on the structure of the vacua, one can obtain different values for the scalar spectral index, noting that future CMB experiments can determine scalar spectral index up to this precision, then that's a quiet, if one can differentiate between different landscapes. So different criteria I presented to distinguish chain inflation from slow roll, and the most The most interesting one is the violation of the consistency relation. So 17 years ago, Copeland and Cole mentioned that with the knowledge of tensor perturbation and scalar perturbation, we can reconstruct the inflationary potential. So if inflation now has happened in a string theory landscape, perhaps this is quite interesting to just get a handle, experimental handle, on something which is otherwise not probable. I don't know if it's the word.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Thank you very much.